state.
Yes.
Mrs. Davis, for the state of Delaware. Mr. Norman Francis, of New Orleans. Mr. Ivan Zilker, of Grand Rapids. Dr. Bell, of your staff, in the Department of Education, Bishop of Madison. Dr. Thompson. Dr. Pierce. This is the Executive Director. This is Norman Karsh. Dr. Walton, you know. My associate, Tim Pace, who, you may remember, ran the White House Conference on Education.
Yes, right, many years ago.
Right. Mr. Saltonstone. Mr. Coleman, I think you met as you started.
Right.
Okay. Because I think perhaps requires that the commission make its final report to you no later than 2 years from the date of the order. And according to our schedule, the work is guaranteed that day, and we foresee at this time nothing which would cause us to miss the deadline. Since the full commission was appointed in June of last year, a series of research projects have been undertaken, both through the services of the commission staff in Washington and on contract with authoritative organizations throughout the country. There are 18 such studies underway. While they are all closely related to the educational concerns which you expressed in your executive order establishing the commission, they are directed specifically to the three major questions which underlie the subject of financing elementary and secondary education in the United States. These are, first, what are the specifics which are included in providing quality education and equality of educational opportunity? Two, what would be the cost of providing these? And third, how may the funds be provided to accomplish this? Many questions, of course, spring from these three, and we are presently immersed in trying to find answers to them. On February 12th, as requested by you, the private panel within the commission forwarded its interim report. Dr. Walton, chairman of the panel, will discuss this issue. The following month, on March 22nd, the commission as a whole furnished you a progress report outlining its work for that time and its plans for the completion of its assignments by March 72. We did not include in the progress report any conclusions or recommendations for obvious reasons. However, pursuant to your directive in the executive order, it is the commission's intention to furnish you certain recommendations and alternatives in its final report. In the meantime, we are working toward completion of research projects, which we believe will furnish the necessary documentation for the report and its findings. We intend, for example, to project the dollar needs of elementary and secondary education through 1980, both by regions of the country and by types of schools, such as inner city, suburban, rural, etc. We are presently examining current sources of funds for education and preparing estimates of the nation's ability to provide additional funds. We are looking at the wide disparities in educational support, which show variation between states of from $438 to $1,237 per pupil in annual school costs. Even within states, wide disparities exist. For example, in one, educational support ranges from $243 per pupil to more than $2,000. We are looking at and expect to recommend alternative revenue arrangements and distribution patterns for the education dollar. We are concerned not only with the nation's ability to provide quality education and equal educational opportunities, but also with what these terms actually mean. One of our major uses of time has been in trying to determine what's meant by these terms, for without defining them, we would not know what it is we are trying to price out. We are concerned with the proper location of educational responsibility and accountability. So also are we concerned with the current social and constitutional aspects of public support of non-public schools, together with the disturbing fact that some of these institutions are closing due to lack of sufficient income. Dr. Walton will talk about that to a more detailed point. We are looking at the responsibility for education, which rests on different levels of government. We'd like to define as well as we can just what part should be played by local, state, and federal governments in financing schools. We're concerned with the adequacy, although not the amount, of data available on education and with which figures are the right ones from among many available. We feel a special concern for the problems of inner city schools, though certainly not to the exclusion of those in the smaller communities, the suburbs, and the rural areas. We wonder if there are not ways to affect greater economies in education, whether technology available in the educational enterprise is being used enough and well. We must be concerned with the nature of future demands on schools, both in quantity and in quality. And surely we are concerned with the measurement of what our schools accomplish and what under more ideal conditions they can be expected to accomplish. In short, Mr. President, you've given us a wide, wide responsibility, one which touches the lives and futures of every citizen in the country. We are endeavoring to do what you've asked us to do and to do it on time. I know I expressed the
administration was deeply committed and was trying to build an instrument to work with the commission and within it to take specific cognizance of their growing needs. And that made our relationships, therefore, with the non-public sector definitely, we viewed it, more meaningful. And number two, we did make, I think, quite effective use of your own commitment to a viable pluralistic system. Again, at a time when the private or non-public sector had such distress, our capacity to quote you, your message, and the cooperation of the administration totally in this effort had very important consequences to those with whom we've talked. Now, the second two questions are, what have we done and what are we finding out? We have talked to a fair number of people who are expert in the field. We have talked to some leaders of the non-public sector representing the National Association of Independent Schools, the Hebrew Day School groups, the various Protestant groups, and obviously the parochial school groups. And what we're finding out leads to the less optimistic side of our discussion.
This is the depression side.
Yes, yes. The sense of crisis that you described, I think, is possibly even worse than what we had anticipated, and certainly I think it's fair to suggest that it is worsening. And it seems to have a kind of circularity of logic where each fact reinforces the concerns of another fact, just to illustrate. In the non-public schools, it gets a parochial school sector. The sponsors themselves are asking whether or not they'll have enough revenue to continue the schools. And that is leading religious superiors to ask whether personnel should be trained in non-educational fields and be deployed. That creates a problem. The teachers themselves aren't sure that the schools will be able to pay salaries or living wages, and that has more effect here. And quite clearly, the parents themselves are not sure that schools such and such this year may not be out of business next year. So, in this instance, I think the panel has tried to use its resources in the first statements to shore up some of the confidence lest we face a deadline complete before our report is done. Now, in the near future, what will happen, I think, will be two things of important consequence to our effort. On May 20th, there will meet here in Washington about 45 leaders from the non-public school sector. We had met with a few leaders 2 months ago, and their zeal to get together and talk, we think, is a very positive thing. The first time that there's a non-public group, and they themselves have been exchanging frank and open, or engaging frank and open dialogue one with another. And I think trying to identify the commonality of their program, trying to determine how to keep alive the private investment in this, which is all over, within, I think, 1.4 billion. Then on May 24th, the panel will be in Michigan. We've contacted Governor Milligan, and we expressed our interest. His response was immediate and enthusiastic. Yes, come. Because we have problems within the state, but we think we have problems that may be prototypical of the country at large as we go through these various gyrations. And when we go up there, it's becoming evident already, just preliminary, that the crisis, I suppose, was ballyhooed as a crisis of the non-public schools, but that the consequences for the public school sector in Detroit up in Marquette region may be very severe indeed. And so we'll be there on May the 24th as your panel. And I simply conclude, Mr. President, with thoughts that used you and your commitment to every full avail. We continue, obviously, to need it because I do believe with all my heart that the non-public sector is at that point in critical decision-making that the restoration of a measure of confidence is crucial.
Oh, of course. Because everybody is lost around here. Now, you want a secretary, you go to the secretary. around the cabinet table, there's some question that we did on it. Anyway, Charlie Wilson, say, he's practically a chain smoker, and I sit there. For example.
how you were getting at that problem.
I'd like to ask Bill Coleman to comment on that, because Bill is functioning as chairman of a committee which is going through this effort, trying to define what is the kind of education you would regard as offering both equality opportunity for educational development of a child, and also, however, an equal availability of this to all children in an even way. John Fisher, the man who I referred to earlier, was the original chairman of this, and Bill has been good enough to pick this up. Would you comment on that?
Mr. President, the commission has one of its major areas of exploration, the whole question of accountability, which I think bears on the points that you were making. How you evaluate the educational output, how do we ascertain whether or not so-called quality education is being produced. Our committee has been grappling with this, and we find that we're on the horns of a dilemma. If we are specific enough to be able to call us out just what quality education means, that means producing ratios of staff to students and that sort of thing, then we begin to sound arbitrary. We are trying to tackle it through the technique of using ranges of ratios, ranges of possible costs. But one of the issues that we must address, in my opinion, and I speak here not just as a member of this committee, but as a school board member here by Montgomery County, we have to satisfy the people that education is trying to reform itself. And this is one of the very great issues that faces this commission.
There is, I think, Mr. President, a problem in public confidence in what education can do, particularly in the areas of the inner city.
Some justify, some not.
That's right. Some justify,
but some not.
In our work, we've discovered that the professional education community itself questions the quality of some of the teachers that have come in during a time of great scarcity of experienced teachers. And in order to staff the schools at all under those conditions, you may remember the White House conference had this. This goes back 15 years. But at that time, the problem really was, were you going to be able to staff the teachers?
That's right. Remember, that was the big thing we were getting. We had to get more teachers, and we didn't get them.
And we didn't get them, but we probably scraped the bottom of a barrel of it in doing so. And these people, the reason I say that this is a viewpoint of the professional educator is that this otherwise would be kind of an invidious comment. But when it comes from within the profession, I think you have a better belief in its validity, that these people have stayed in the school system long enough so that many of them now have tenure, and it becomes a real problem of unprepared teachers having tenure to hold, therefore, in the system at a time when really they need refreshment of their own abilities. And whether they will do this and get out and get it is something that I think is going to take some doing.
Let me say one thing I was particularly glad you emphasized, and I hope that you continue the emphasis on it. You mentioned the inner city, which of course is an enormous problem. The costs are high, the problems are great. You also mentioned the fact, however, that you were not overlooking the rural part of America.
Rural,
of course, you have terrible deficiencies, and the problems there will be inner city problems later. You all have them. I mean, particularly the West, not just the South, where it is enormous, but also in other parts of the country. But I think an analogy will bring back when we look at our cities. I mean, New York or Philadelphia, whatever the case might be. It's right there. You can see it and say, gee, what are we going to do about that high school or this grade school or so forth and so on. But out there in those rural areas, it's much harder to get the interest and so forth. But from the work of sports, I was talking to Ted Williams the other day when he came in or something past from either, and
probably the best batter.
He said Hank Aaron, of course.
He made an interesting point. He said if Aaron had played for New York City, he would have been recognized as the greatest batter of all time, except, of course, for Williams. But anyway, he didn't say Williams. I didn't. Everybody knows that Williams would have been after he couldn't play down after been in New York City. The point that he made, and I noted a couple of sports writers that picked this up, several of them. Aaron, who played with the Braves, first in Milwaukee and then down in Atlanta, the great natural swing and all that sort of thing. But Aaron just hasn't got the publicity that Mickey Mantle is. Mickey Mantle was a great, but Aaron's better. Aaron's better. And still is, even now. This doesn't take any away from Willie Mays, who of course is more spectacular and one of the real great ones, or Ernie Banks, or the rest. Each of them, perhaps. My point is that to now get the analogy down, we tend to be to zero in on the problems of the city and to overlook the problem of the rural part of this country. There's more poverty in rural America. There's more unemployment in rural America. There's poorer housing in rural America and poor education. I strongly hope that you will tilt it that way, as well as toward the problems in the city.
We do plan to. I want to call your attention to the fact that one of the members of the commission is Dr. Thompson, who comes to us as the superintendent in Greenville, Mississippi. Now, Greenville is not a great metropolis, so it doesn't take long to get from Greenville out into the country, and Dr. Thompson brings to our council a great deal of the kind of thing of keeping us balanced a bit in that relationship.
Well, another point that I think that Dr. Thompson would probably agree with, and all of you would, that we also have to realize, of course, that when they take Iowa as an example, Iowa has very low, much lower teacher salaries and so forth than you have in New York City. That the quality of education is directly related to teacher salaries in both. You've got some very good teachers in Iowa. You've got some very good teachers in Mississippi. You can get a lot more for your money in what we call rural America than you can in metropolitan America. And that's true whether it's lawyers, doctors, anything else. I mean, it's because the cost is so much higher. But I think when we really go back to the federal aid to education proposition, and it came up, you remember, you know, back in that period, we were the ones that really finally took it in that direction. But what we recognized then, and what we really needed, was to get some of the money in the areas where that really were needed. In other words, pull them up, because we had very high standards in some areas and very low in others. Now, having said all that, the inner city problem, of course, we know is a special problem of enormous difficulty, particularly affects you. And you talk to people like Cardinal Cook, any of the top people who are men, Los Angeles, and so forth. And as practically go up, and they raise more and more money, more and more problems.
Now, you talked a little earlier about the need for innovation in education in order to move in from that standpoint toward reform. And the commission met in Los Angeles. And at that time, Mrs. Ford and Mr. Gonzalez organized a presentation to us of some quite novel experimental things that had been going on and quite successfully in that area. I thought maybe Mrs. Ford might want to suggest that I hope you'll come in too to say the ways in which certainly in the Los Angeles area, which is not unfamiliar to you, Mr. Griffiths.
So, Mr. Brandon, in your own hometown in Whittier, where I live, where Whittier College is located, we have a very fine bicultural program that we're working with the Whittier College and with several of our high schools there, and with the elementary and junior high in trying to better the education. The other programs we brought in was one in the inquiry method and another in the vocation area in a spin-off program where we're trying to teach students so that they're job ready when they come out of school. Teaching at least one skill and as many as they're able to acquire within a period of time. They aren't the lockstep method as they have been in the past. And this is bringing in your creative, innovative methods so that we will train people for the market. And Gene, would you like to add to some of the things, other things we're doing?
Yes, I'd like to. California's taking advantage of Title VII PC to the bilingual act. Some 25
years using it,
In fact, California has captured some one-third of all projects nationally, about $6-7 million stemming from the Indian population in Rita, the Japanese, Chinese in San Francisco, down in the Santa Monica area, the Portuguese, long down the collection of San Diego for Spanish speaking. We're trying a new program. We figured that one district, even as large as, say, Los Angeles, Rivera, Whittier might be, none has the capacity or the talent for all the teachers who are bilingual to teach a single class handling all the students. Therefore, we formed a consortium whereby districts get together, they pool the resources. Less money, more students, and more resources from the area. But in order to do this, we need teacher training. And we now have a contract with Whittier College to train teachers. Because unless we have bilingual teachers, and all the, not only all the language, but the culture, we'll never be able to do the job. If we're able to put on this program, say, unless the cost, that would normally cost six times as much to serve the same number of students, by training teachers, working with the parents, and particularly bringing in the younger people, whereby they can, teacher age, so they can aspire to become teachers themselves. And we tried that in California. You know, Texas has about 41% of all the Spanish people, and half the other 41%.
Yeah.
And I suspect we're looking at Texas.
Right. Well, this problem, you know, the Spanish speaking, particularly Mexican American and so forth, is one that is now coming into public view, and it will become more and more in public view as they become, and some of their leaders become more vocal. But many are not aware of the fact that basically the Los Angeles County area, in terms of the per capita income and so forth, Mexican American has more of a problem than Black Americans in many areas. At least this is a fairness because of it, because he has the double problem. He's got that first, he's new, many times he's an indecent immigrant, basically. Second, he has the language problem. And we simply have to steer away on that, or because it's going to blow up. And so you talk about the Chicanos, and it's obvious. I mean, my question thing, I mean, they've been passive and quiet, law-abiding and all the rest, and they see people that are not passive and quiet getting more, so they're going to get more. That's why they're doing it. And we've got to anticipate and do something about it. When I grew up, I mean, in my area, you know, Los Angeles, we all grew up in that area.
There's one other program I think you missed in, where we're using the private sector in vocational education, making use of facilities within the communities to train, using their instructors, giving them vocational credentials. For instance, we have several hospital programs that in the Black area in Compton and Centennial High School. We're also doing it out in some of our low-income areas. Into there, using both hospitals and retail stores for the training within the industry itself, doing it in key touch.
How much is the commission going to go into all of the food? This is how much. For example, are you going into that?
You know, about 3 months.
Yeah, well, you know, television and the
mobile circuit.
Yeah. All this circuit.
We have a special study on the technology of education.
Yeah.
And this will include
one comment that will probably point to an answer to some of the questions that you raised, is fixing responsibility at the state level and finding ways to relieve the property tax as the main source of supporting education. Now, this immediately moves you into the concept of more nearly full funding at the state level and some imaginative approaches both to collection and disbursing of funds. There are a number of state commissions that are involved in these studies. I would commend to you and to the staff the reading of Governor Milliken's statement, which he submitted on education, which I think is extremely imaginative and constructive. Now, quite a number of states are also in this process. Now, as we pull those together and look at them, I think this is going to point some new ways to go about this whole process that will both have an impact upon public education, but on non-public education also.
Well, the property tax, of course, is the one that strikes the wrong nerve. Income tax and sales tax and all the rest, it's the one where you get a bill twice a year. And people know that it's gone up three times, it's tripled in the last 10 years, and even though in terms of the money that it takes, it's relatively small compared to the others, the escalator that he produces is the one that people directly associate with education. Right? That's true. Therefore, it gets back to the way of, I suppose, you're dodging the problem, you understand? You're dodging it by saying, look, folks, let's find a more indirect way to finance education and pay more. But I must say that when you talk, when you get down to this whole business of the tax system, see, our general revenue sharing can help there. You get general revenue sharing and also special revenue sharing. It's where the federal government might be collecting taxes at the federal level. Without getting into all the arguments pro and con, one thing about the federal government is it's a much better instrumentality for collecting taxes and a much poorer one for dispensing services. So that's the proposition that we have, general revenue sharing. We collect money and then we'll parcel it out to the states. Of course, spending as they like that will eventually might at least stop the rise in property taxes eventually.
I also think it gives us the vehicle for reform when we're talking about this.
Yes, I see.
You agree implicitly, but
one has to use that as a method, of course.
What would need to be done if this were possible? And I think that without trying to write the report in advance, because this we don't want to do.
Oh,
I think what Linda Pierce is saying is a frankly direction. But if this is to be done, it means really that the state education administration needs in most instances to be substantially strengthened. In other words, if that's going to be the source of the funds.
You got to say that.
You're going to
bite such points.
Oh, yes.
I think it's very important that the commission, I guess, without getting into the technical, it's vitally important that you take on the sacred cows. Don't just make it a massive report. Well, education needs more money. Everybody knows education needs more money. Everybody knows that education needs to be upgraded. Everybody knows we've got problems in the inner city. Everybody knows we've got problems in climate. Everybody knows we've got problems in rural America. The question is, how and why? And unless you fight this problem, believe me, you and all of us work with you. And I know you've done a great deal. But if it is useless. You ought to say some things that may be a controversial crack, you know.
We would expect to.
And I think you could say some things about this. If you feel that, for example, that the property tax thing was wrong, say so.
Oh, crack it hard.
So that people can get straight. And the deal that education administration needs to be strengthened, say so. The Columbia School may not like it, but say it, you know. Or some other school may not, Berkeley, but I think you've got to be very sure that the one problem that every task force and every commission has on education is this, and I say this in the presence of some very fine professional educators. Generally, you will be captured by the establishment. And you will simply reflect their views. If you have, you fail. You might as well not set it up at all. That doesn't mean you go against everything they're for, because they're for a lot of good things. And many of them are just as
positions are 5 million. Add 2, subtract 2, 5 million in terms of the higher education, 5 million that are in schools that are supported privately, right? That's the number. Yeah. All right. So these schools go down to 2. And let's forget whether or not it's a good thing if they ever exist. They'll say, well, we don't like religious training. We don't like the kind of religious training they're having. Something you can argue a lot about that. And they don't like some of the changes that they're taking in every church, the Catholic Church, the French Church, and the rest, and so forth. But to come right down to the cold turkey proposition, let's suppose that, look at the private school situation. You take those 5 million and dump them, where particularly when their primary impact is in the areas of great, great problem, and that is they're primarily in the cities and the rest are in Philadelphia or Chicago and Los Angeles and New York. You dump them on the public education system, you're going to have an enormous crisis. So we've got to do something about it. Now, having made that argument on the money side, I happen to believe, personally, this would be, even though I like public schools, would again, my kids would go and so forth. But I happen to believe that in our system, it's a good thing to have a strong, viable, private school system, along with the public schools. Strong and viable. And I don't think there's any problem with the church, state, business, and all that. Particularly when we can separate out textbooks and visual aids. And, you know, there are lots of ways it can be done. That's very important, I think. But we ought to be smart enough, though, to figure that out. And I don't go along with some of the people I know, and I think many of them have changed too, who just think that they've got to spend their lives fighting the private schools and fight something else. I mean, after all, they're all kids. let's hope to God that we can give them the best we can. So I feel very strongly on that issue, but not meaning to tell you how to write your report.
Sensitive issue. The leadership, let's face it,
coming from government, and it has to come from people. And I think this is a
great credit of both the administration and the Congress that we have this kind of vision. Laws are being proposed for education. If you keep it up, I think we will have a good school system. You can again. Richardson is the first class advocate. Sorry, skillful advocate. Yes, hear from that guy.
Mr. Tubby. Well, I just wanted to make the same statement I've made several times, Mr. McElroy. I agree with your philosophy on private education, but I'm from a section of the country that we have to deal with this in a different fashion. And after Father McManus made his brief statements here about, I agree with this, but we have to deal with this differently to the degree that we cannot ill afford. I fight for public education. Well, in the particular area of the Mississippi Delta that I live in, which is predominantly black, certain types of voucher systems would more or less burn public schools. And I have to keep that in mind. And in certain southern states, this can happen.
Well, you need to go to a special situation.
Yes, sir. Now, and they know my feelings on this. We've discussed this before. But I'll have to stand by public education.
Sure.
And if it's not handled properly, and through the Title Acts, we can share with the parochial school some things. But then you've got to make clear-cut statement as to what is public and private education and distinguish with these segregation academies of that type that are springing
right
up, that what, how do they share and federal funding?
We are.
Now that's it. That would make me popular in my statement.
I understand. We're hard pressed cognizant of that problem. You know, it's an interesting thing. I suppose all of you are aware of the figures, but even before this latest tends to sort of limit south and backwards in this sort of field. It is not irrelevant to note that just 2 years ago that 68% of all black students in the south were in all black schools, now 18% of this. It's also not irrelevant to note that 38% of all black students in the south go to majority white schools, and in the north only 28%. So the problem is now shifting. That does not mean that there are not solutions in the areas that are vestiges of the school system, sure, it's back and so forth. But I never can tolerate the hypocrisy of the northern students that are never really white suburbs, but the southern is not really integrated. It's a problem that we all have got to face. Got to be happening fairly and objectively, and I think the Southerners, both blacks and whites, deserve a great deal of credit for the way that they have gone through the traumatic experience of the last year, and they will handle this decision too, mainly because they have a law-abiding tradition. And I think they're going to go over and follow through. I agree on the problem of the academies and the vouchers and so forth, but I think they have one problem. They have somewhat the same problem in the sense that many experts think what's the situation in regard to the institution of slavery. Probably did not have survived anyway. It had, of course, to be eradicated. But as far as the voucher system, those academies, they can't make it. They're going to, or they can't really hack it, can they? Unless they get a lot of assistance from areas that you suggested.
Well, not only
that, their college schools are going to be better.
Yes, they are. But I think it's all about if we can maintain. If the recent Supreme Court decision, we can get this worked out.
Sorry.
In Alabama, so the other states. If we can work this out, then it should be able to work in this nation.
Your main problem in the South, as I understand it too, is as it is in the North, and that's why the problem is so much more difficult now in the North, these 38, 28 numbers, is that they
South, which is the predominantly rural part of the South, is salt and pepper. Whereas it's only in some of the large cities like Atlanta and Charlotte and others where you, once they move into cities and the segregation patterns come in, but the salt and pepper areas, that's why you have such a very high degree of integration. Is that true?
Yes.
And it's working reasonably well. Oh, there are many problems.
Well, we have our problems. I'm a superintendent of school. I deal with this every day.
No. You got the problems. The real question is, do you have segregation or discrimination as a result of putting some more advanced students than other students? You have a problem with quality teachers, et cetera, et cetera. We all know that. That's a problem in the North, too. It's North and South. And I must say that I don't think any of us in this field should stick our noses in the air and say, look, we're pretty good. The others, it's a bunch of savages. It just happens that we all grew up in different parts of the country and we all should have tolerance. And not tolerance of what is wrong, but tolerance of people that are trying to correct what is wrong in a decent, honored, law-abiding way. And but if we come back, we need that billion and a half thing through. If we get a billion and a half, that's going to have a great impact. That's where we're at. Because if this money is needed desperately right now,
well, you got back,
we've already spent it.
I just want to ask one other question. Are you optimistic that we will be allowed to use some of the emergency assistance money for transportation in areas where state statute will not permit transportation within a municipality?
Well, I think your statutes may have problems in that court decision. What do you think?
I think we could do it, yes, sir. It is broad enough to justify that kind of usage. Whether or not the local community would want to do it or not, it would be entirely up to them.
Well, the Senate permits this. Yes, we're studying it in the Office of Education.
We almost got through last year, but I think it'll go through this year.
Well, I have to, I'd like to contribute this, but I apparently
for joining us for this. It's, as you can imagine, highly stimulating to all of us to realize that you have this depth of interest in what we're doing. I think also it's very helpful for you to give us the injunction to report to you with candidates.
Yes, you must do that. Otherwise, you're careful with the first mile. Okay.
Thank you.
Establishment, any establishment. Listen to them.
something better happens.
What's working?
You just get more dough.